make no mistake, learning how to hunt and fish with Roy Bilby as my father was learning how to hunt and fish with cheat codes.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
Hey, JD, how was your Christmas?
My Christmas was, it was a lot of fun. My Christmas was a blast. How was yours?
Always the same. All good. My son and his wife travel here from New Hampshire, and they just got married this past September, so we have a new daughter-in-law.
That's
we
right.
Love her dearly. They've been together 10 years and going to be with us on the podcast today. So been waiting for a chance to give his two cents on what it was like growing up with a dad who was a fishaholic.
Are we going to be uncovering some trauma today?
Going to be dishing out some dirt on me, I'm afraid, more than likely.
Well, welcome. Technically, you're our first guest. This is monumental.
Well, thanks for having me on. Thanks, Dad. It's great to finally be on the podcast after listening for, I don't know, every episode so far.
Since the beginning.
Yeah, since the beginning.
A faithful follower. See, now, here's the thing. He's always listened to podcasts. And when you approached me about doing this, I said, it was foreign to me. I knew about podcasts, but I was not listening to any. And if you recall, we were fishing that day.
Yeah.
And well, see, you and I have a history. We have a past where we worked together through a different agency, Boy Scouts.
Yep.
And that was our relationship. And then you were gone for like 8 years down south and in Pennsylvania. And then you resurfaced up here, called me out of the blue, said, "Hey, I'm back in the area. We should fish together." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'll do that. Everybody knows me. I'll fish at the drop of a hat. Giddy up." But that's just what I do.
Was my number still in your phone?
What's that?
I said, was my number still in your phone? It must have.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was, but this is like two phones later, too.
Okay. So go on.
And one of those phones, I had to implement everything by hand because it wouldn't transfer.
Your dad is really good
with
technology.
You told me who it was. We talked, and see, we had never fished before, but we both knew each other fished. And you had me come up to camp when you were the director and do fishing seminars on Thursday nights for the scouts that wanted to attend. That was the extent of our fishing relationship, other than knowing that we both like to fish. And I mean, when you said, I've been back in the area a week, we should get together and fish. I'm like, yeah, let's do that.
You were up.
It was a little odd because neither of us, we had not fished together before,
right.
But well, I was in that boat 5 minutes and you said, "You ever thought about doing a podcast?" And I went, "Aha."
That wasn't my reason for inviting you out there.
It thought it was.
No, that just popped in my head. No. That just popped in my head. I was there.
I wanted to fish. I thought it was a setup.
No, I wanted to.
Very flattered.
I just wanted to fish. No, it popped in my head because you immediately told me a story. And I was reminded of how good of a storyteller you are. So, you know, you're a prolific speaker. This is where I stick my nose in your dad's butt. You're a prolific speaker, Roy. So
I know.
You know, so I think that, you know, I believed that you needed another platform. And
I have tremendously appreciated it. I got 40 years of stories, but my deal is I have a passion for sharing what I've learned to shorten the learning curve for everybody else. That's just how I got into doing seminars. And it's been great. But when we started the podcast, before we did it, before I agreed to do it, I bounced the idea off my son Ryan's head. I said, "Hey, I had a guy approach me about doing a podcast on fishing. He responded with just two words, all in capital letters, do that. But I had some reservations. See, my son has strong opinions, and he'll tell you exactly what his opinion is. And it doesn't matter if it's in line with yours or not. You will always know exactly where he stands, and he won't mince words. So my concern was, whenever we put out the first episode, I knew he was going to listen to it, but I didn't know if his reaction would be that he liked it, or if I was going to get a phone call saying, hey, number one, don't tell anybody you're my father. Number two, don't ever do that again. That's, you know, I had no idea what his reaction was going to be, but it's been overwhelmingly in support of what you and I have done together. And that just, you know, that's very humbling to me. I appreciate it very much because I do value his opinion, and it makes it a lot more enjoyable to do what we do, knowing I've got his approval.
Well, I tell you what, that would have been an awkward episode today if he came on here with the opposite feeling about it and wanted to tell us how horrible it was.
Yeah, we don't want to turn this into an intervention.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, guys.
Yeah. As long as I've got the mic here, let me just share my opinion with you.
Dad, you know, we all love you and we care for you a whole heck of a lot, but there's something we need to talk about. Oh, yeah.
You're giving me anxiety just saying that.
Yeah. No, this should be fun, but I have a feeling I'm going to get some dirt exposed.
Believe it or not, every trip we've been on has not been 50 plus fish days and great weather, and everything goes great and everything stays in the boat that we want to stay in the boat. You know, with as many trips as you and I have been on, there's been some mishaps and some less than stellar days, but that's what builds upon all of our experience and what puts us to the place we're in now with our success and what we do.
That, and that's just reality. You don't always have a stellar day, but I can honestly say I've never had a bad day on the water, because if I'm out there, I'm doing what I love, and results notwithstanding, they're all good. I've never had a bad day on the water because I've been on the water. So it's my passion and I love it. And like that, I sat in a deer stand today. We have a special holiday deer season that lasts 7 days. And it's the first time I've ever sat in this stand and not had a deer come through. Last time I sat in, I had 13 come through. And I just, you know, elected not to shoot. But today was the first time I've ever sat in that stand and never had a deer come through. And I still had a wonderful, glorious day observing all kinds of wildlife, everything except deer. So I saw a lot of stuff. I call it the show. And sometimes you get the squirrel channel like you wouldn't believe. And then other days, the deer channel comes in really well, and you're successful and you got venison. So, and I've already got two in the freezer. My son and his wife have a couple in the freezer. We're all good. We're ready to start ice fishing. So let's get into the dirt.
Well, this first story is called Cold Start.
And I was afraid of this one.
This is a good one. It's all about lessons learned. This was, yeah. I'm sure you can look back in your journal, although you might leave this part out and what you wrote down, but
I might have.
It was either the spring or the fall, but it was definitely a time of the year when you start in the morning and it's dark, it's high 30s, low 40s. It's definitely very, very cold, fog on the water. But during the day, it'll get up well into the 60s, mid 60s. You'll be in a t-shirt and it'll be warm and sunny and great. But when people are asleep and they're not thinking about how cold it is overnight, that's when we're
loading up the boat.
That's when we're at the dock and we're getting ready before anyone else is out there, and we're loading the boat. And I thought, I left my jacket at home. Oh no, I'm just wearing a light hooded sweatshirt and that's it.
How old were you?
I must have been 12 or 13, okay. Old enough to know better, but I realized I forgot my jacket. I had nothing to break the wind. And I brought it up and I said, Dad, I forgot my jacket. And I think you replied something with, sounds good, grab the bow line.
Yeah.
It just didn't really compute. So I thought, well, I'm out here. I can't drive. I'm signed up for this. I'm here all day. So I got my stuff in the boat and we
took off.
Did you? I think that was that the red nitro?
Probably.
I think that
at
was
that
the,
point.
The red nitro era.
The first nitro I ever had.
What was the top speed on that?
52 miles an hour.
Fast enough to know if you've ever been on a motorcycle, it's a very similar feeling. You're totally exposed and you're out there and you're a sail for the wind. You're getting everything. And we threw everything in the boat and you fired up the motor. And to my dismay, it ran great. And we were
always did
headed across to the opposite end of the lake at full speed. And I remember getting all that cold air. And by the time we got to the spot, I thought, I don't even know if I can really use my hands. I'm so cold. And you charge right up to the front deck, drop the trolling motor, turn on the Hummingbird, and we were off. And yep. I made a few casts and my teeth were chattering. I was hanging on by a thread and I put my rod down and sat down on the seat, which was not what my father likes to see when it's his only day off and he decides to spend all day fishing with his son and he's sitting on a seat, not fishing because he forgot his jacket and he's cold. It's not the best display on my part. And
yeah, but you were a kid.
I was a kid. You're again tough. Old enough to know better. And I thought, I guess I'll just have to wait this out. I'm kind of stuck here. And fired out a couple frustrated casts and finally put the rod down and said, okay, and fired up the motor and started headed up toward the lake, back toward the boat launch. And I thought, great, maybe he'll start the truck and I can warm up. Maybe we're going to go home and get my jacket, anything.
Yeah, I know what's coming here.
And that was not what happened.
No, it's not.
You tied up the boat to the dock, which was admittedly not the worst place to fish, not what you had in mind, but you tied off the boat to the dock and said, okay, get out, run a couple laps around the parking lot, and you'll warm up.
Are you serious?
Yes, he's serious.
That's what I asked him. Are you serious? And you said, yeah, I'm serious, and fired off a cast off the dock. And what am I going to do? So I start with little baby steps, tiny little jogs, and it's a pretty big parking lot. And I did one lap around and came around and looked as if to say, is that good? And you gave me the signal. Nope.
If you do another lap, do another lap.
Are you warm yet? No. Okay. Keep running.
Yeah. So keep it moving. So I did two laps and to his credit, I was warm after that. It did work. Had my hood up, had my hat on, everything I could to just batten down. And after two laps, oh, I'm feeling pretty warm. Good. Hop in the boat. Fired up the motor, back down the lake again.
You get cold all over again?
I mean, it definitely didn't help. But by the time we got to the end of the lake, the sun started to come up and that helped a bit. And I knew I wasn't necessarily chained to the boat, but I didn't have anywhere else to go. And I was signed up for the day.
It was stuck for the day with dear old dad.
Yep. By the time,
what lake were you on?
My shirt was black. So it did help with the sun. And once the sun came up, I thought, well, this is my lot. So I just got to take it for what it is.
What lake was that on?
Canada Rego Lake.
There were no cell phones back then. You definitely didn't have a cell phone at that point.
This is the 90s.
Yeah, 90s. Your dad wouldn't have had one yet.
No.
Believe
me, my mother's not about to.
And a payphone. Your mom wouldn't have drove out there. It wasn't that far out, though. Canada Rego to where you guys are is only like, what, 35 minutes?
All right. Here's my side of the story. Because when the first time we talked about this, when he was an adult and said to me, do you remember the time when? And I said, I didn't even remember. I said, I did that? He goes, yeah, you did that. You made me run laps in the parking lot, said I would warm up. He said, and I got really mad because it did warm me up. and it worked. To explain why I did what I did at the time, you have to understand that I was doing heavy construction. I was working 6 days a week. I had Sundays off. Sunday was the one day I had to live my life and do what I, you know, look forward to all week. And my family and my outdoor pursuits were my passions. And I could mix them and cram them into one day by taking my son and forcing him to fish with me for the day.
And you'll be darned.
The only way I could spend time with him doing what we both like to do. And if the conditions were bad, we just did it anyway because we weren't going to be robbed at that time.
And you were going to be darned if you were going to have your day of fishing squashed by a hypothermic 13-year-old
who forgot his extra jacket. Yeah, I'm guilty. I'm guilty.
Did you just kind of like tell yourself that he wasn't, like, what was going on in your head when you saw him and his lips were blue sitting on your seat?
I can tell you what he was thinking. We should be on that point that drops from 9 to 13 feet right now, not at the dock.
Before that sun comes up and ruins the bite. Yeah, but something like that, probably, if I had to guess, he's probably right.
Ryan, having a dad be Roy, your dad being Roy, did he make fishing not fun for you?
Absolutely, sometimes, but that was a fraction of it, because overall, looking back,
I've
heard people describe this as type A and type B fun. So type A, if I'm correct, is we went out, we caught 100 bass. It was a great day. Everything went correctly. Everything was on schedule. We left on time, did everything we wanted to. And those are the days you remember. But type B fun is when the next story I'll tell you, something bad happens. Or remember the time I forgot my jacket and I had to run laps and we got a cold start. That's type B fun. And those are the times you remember in a different way, but also in a great way, because we can look back at this now and talk about it on a podcast and laugh about it. And it's a core memory for me. And I really value and I very much cherish that time, because I'll tell you, that was the last time I ever forgot my jacket going fishing with my father.
Yeah.
Or doing anything else, most likely.
It was burned into your memory of what not to do.
Absolutely. It was a very important lesson. And again, a core memory, because at the time, I thought this is the most miserable thing I could possibly be doing. All of my friends are still wrapped up in bed and they're going to wake up and play video games, but they'll never have good memories about that. But I'll have a good memory about that day.
Of course.
And it's carried me into adulthood for sure.
Well, you know, and I wasn't trying to say, Roy, please don't think I was trying to say that, you know, you're not fun to fish with, because you are fun to fish with.
Well, I never made you run laps, did I?
No. No, you haven't.
Did you ever forget your jacket,
though? I've definitely been cold on the boat with Roy. Yes.
Yeah.
That has happened.
You'll never die out there, right? So what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
Just be cold. I don't like being cold. That day that I caught my personal best for the summer with your dad, I was wearing my snowboard clothes. I was wearing bibs. I had like snowboard bib pants on, and I had my Gore-Tex ski jacket on top with two layers underneath. Was that May or June we went out there? Was that June? It was May. It was probably May.
It was May.
But it was like 40.
Yeah, it was a cold morning.
It was a cold morning. We were out there at like, I think we hit the water at like 9 that day. It was late morning.
It was so cold.
Yeah. It rained.
Yep.
It was raining that day.
Dad, do you remember what you used to call me when I used to wear every stitch of clothing I had to stay warm for fishing?
I would call him the turtle, because he would crawl underneath the console of the bass boat and stick his head down inside his collar so all I could see was the top of his head. I used to call it the turtle.
So you couldn't just, after all the times this kid was being froze out on your boat, you couldn't get him like a heavy jacket to wear on the boat when you go out on these?
Oh, no, he had it. He would just stick his head and turn him, put himself inside it like a turtle.
I was in survival mode.
What were you wearing, Roy?
I was wearing a Hummingbird hoodie and standing on the front deck and firing cast after cast after cast.
The difference being, you were working heavy construction outdoors all year in any conditions, and I was used to sitting in a classroom all day in a heated room.
Right. Yeah. That's the difference. I was conditioned.
I was also a child.
But I was not going to not spend the time together,
whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
Well, that's good, though. It's good, because obviously, as you saw and you're seeing with your own child, that time is limited. Tempest fugit.
Spend time with me.
Yeah. We are going to be together.
Yes, and you're going to like it.
So what's the next story, Ryan?
This next one is called I've Seen It on TV. And this was one of those days that was set up to be amazing. One of those high numbers days in a undisclosed location that's full of stunted largemouth, and you can go and catch, people won't believe the numbers, you can catch hundreds of fish in one day. It's cookie cutter bass that are all generally under, you know, 10, 11 inches.
They were most of them, most of them were between 11 and 12. They were just a hair under legal size, but there was, this place never got fished. And so there was tremendous competition for anything that landed in that water. The thing about this place was you could catch ridiculous numbers of bass, and 99.5% of them were all the same size, just a stitch under legal size. But it also happens to be the place where, when he was 12 years old, he caught his personal best largemouth at 6 pounds, 13 ounces, which is a big largemouth for New York State. And I've caught some fives there, some fours, some threes, but literally thousands of 11 and a half, 11 and three quarter inch bass. So
I remember after we fished it one time, we stopped at a gas station and there's a state trooper and asked you, how's the fishing today? And you said, I don't think you'd believe me if I told you, officer. And he said, try me. And he said, we caught 246 fish today. And he said,
You're right. I don't believe you.
Right. Have a good day, guy, you know, and kept it moving. But we were fishing that spot and it was fairly early in the day. We were probably only an hour or two in. And he said, drop anchor here. So I had the anchor in my hand. I dropped it into the water and I was letting the line run through my hand. And at the time you had this old braided yellow nylon rope for an anchor line.
Oh, I know where this is going. And oh my goodness. I thought you were talking about something else. But yeah, this story.
Yeah, I was letting the line go through my hand and I was looking in the other direction. And on the seat of the boat, I had a black and gold Rapala with two sets of treble hooks on it. And that braided nylon rope had a lot of memory and a lot of kinks in it. It wouldn't fall flat. It would kind of create a nest in it. It was all over the place. And as I was letting it go through my hand, a tag end part of the rope picked up that Rapala, and as I was letting the line go through my hand, that Rapala went with it and then through my hand, through my fingers, letting that anchor just go out.
Yep. On the way to the anchor.
Pulled one of the treble hooks on my right ring finger on the inside meat and
buried it.
I mean, we were in 12 feet of water, so the anchor was almost at the bottom and it just about ripped my hand out. And I said,
I heard that.
And I didn't really know what happened. And then I saw there's a Rapala in the anchor line and in my hand. So we really carefully pulled the anchor up. And, you know, at this age, I was probably, you can look back in your journal, you can find the exact date it happened, but I was young, probably 11 or 12.
11 or 12-ish.
And growing up, my father's like the man, always has an answer, always knew what to do. I never saw him get nervous or scared or, he was always in control, never out of control. Always, if I followed my old man, we're going in the right direction. But this, I think, was the first time that I saw him a little nervous and not really sure what to do next, because going to the hospital was out of the question. That would take way too much time out of our day. He thought, okay, this is what we'll do. I'm going to clip the split ring that attaches the treble to the Rapala so we can isolate the hook. Got the anchor line in, got that all off to the side. So now I just have a treble hook in my ring finger and it's really close to the palm of my hand.
So you couldn't cast.
You can't push it all the way through. It was deep into the bend.
Too deep to push
through. It was as far deep as it could possibly go.
Right. Yeah.
And it was a sharp hook.
And it wasn't, you didn't pinch the barbs on that one. They weren't pinched, obviously. So they were.
You weren't passing it through. It was really near the bone in my finger. It was just too deep. So he said, we've got two choices and I'll leave it up to you. One, we can leave. We can go to the hospital. I'm not sure how they would handle something that deep. They can't pass the hook through. They might have to cut your finger open and dig it out that way. Not very appealing. We were already off to a great start that day. Option two, I can try this thing. I've seen it on TV. You take a length of line and you loop it through the bend in the hook and you push down on the shank to try to get that barb to back out of the same hole. And then real quick, you just pop the line and the hook should just boop, come right out.
Come right out. The hole went in for it's a line trick. You know,
I've seen it.
Or any place else is familiar with the line trick.
Well, this is before the internet. So I think you said, I've seen this on TV. You probably saw Jimmy Houston do it. And sure. He explained to me how it works. And I have never seen it. So I thought, I trust my dad. Okay. And you said, if I try it and it doesn't work,
we are going to the hospital. Yes. No two ways about it. We're getting you to the emergency room. And to his credit, when I said, I can try to pop it out with a line trick, or we can go to the emergency room, your choice. He said, well, if it works with a line trick, we can keep fishing, right? I said, if you feel like it.
Absolutely.
But I said, I've never done it. I've seen it done. And you're the last person in the world, you know, I want to experiment with it on, but it's supposed to work. So he said, I want to try that. I said, if it doesn't work, we are out of here because I don't want to hurt you. I said, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to pray about this and ask God's help with it, because I don't want to rip your hand in half, you know, with this line trick. And I said, it's going to be 1, 2, 3, pop. Okay. He goes, okay. I said, take a deep breath. Are you sure you want me to try this? He said, yes. So I said, 1, and on 2, I popped it.
Did it come out?
And it clean as a whistle. He didn't even.
I barely felt it.
He didn't hardly know I did it. I went, it's out. He goes, it is? Yeah, I don't know where the hook went. And I didn't really care.
Doesn't matter.
He had a little teeny spot where it was in his, and it was buried up to the bend. Like he said, it couldn't go.
Was it bleeding a lot?
Because it got pulled down. It got pulled in with an anchor. Okay.
Right. Was it bleeding?
What's that?
Was it bleeding?
No, no. He had a little red dot where the hook went in. I said, we need to bleed that to flush it out. And we had to pinch his finger to get any blood to come out. The line trick is the deal. Anybody who's never tried it, you should Google it right now. Go to YouTube, do whatever you need to do, and learn that trick. It's simple to do. And why don't you tell them what you did this summer?
I had to try it on a friend 3 times in one day. I'll say the first one didn't work out too good. What happened was he bought a tracker 1236. I bought a 1436. I bought a boat. Made him hot to trot. He bought one. And we said, let's go fish the local smallmouth lake. Let's do it. We'll meet up. We'll boat versus boat. I caught more fish, whatever. But when we were when we were at the launch, it's a really nice launch. But the thing is, there's all these concrete blocks they set for the launch. And where you're walking around, it's nice and dry and it's not slippery. But the ones that are in the water have a thin film of algae on it, and they're very, very slick. And this was August, so he's out there in shorts and sandals, not that I wear those, but he slipped. He put his rods in the boat, he slipped on the algae, and he put his hand down to catch himself and put it down right on a whopper plopper and had it right in the palm of his hand. And I'd already had my boat set up. I parked my car, I was walking back, and I heard, I'm like, geez, we're not even fishing yet. What are we whooping up about? And he said, oh, I'm hooked. I can't believe it. I can't believe this. And he held it up, and I'm like, oh, man. All right. Hey, you got 2 choices. We go to urgent care, or I can try the line trick. And I told him the story I just told you guys. And he said, we haven't even started. Let's give it a try. I said, okay. And me thinking ahead, in my boat, I keep a spare box with a set of super high quality stainless steel side cutters just for cutting split rings and hooks, only for emergencies. And in that same box, I keep a little med kit for anything that you might run into. So I told him about the line trick. I cut a section of 20-pound braid. I put around the bend of the hook, and I explained to him what I'm going to do. I said, this has worked on me. When it came out, it felt like nothing. So hopefully this works, but I've never tried it. He said, all right, I trust you. And I did the same thing. I said, I'm going to pull it on 1, 2, 3, go. And on go, I'm going to pull it. Are you ready? He said, yes. I said, 1, 2. And on 2, I pulled it and it didn't come out. And I yanked hard.
Yeah, well, he yanked more up than back.
Didn't have the right trajectory.
Right.
It's got to be like a 45 degree. You got to pull up and back
to get
that barb to line up with the slot it made going in. If you just pull up, it's going to grab all kinds of meat. And that guy, from what I hear, that guy screamed bloody murder when it happened.
Yeah, he wasn't having a good time. And I said, well, we still have two choices.
Yeah.
I can try it again or we can go.
Able. Yeah. I said, my trajectory was a little off. I think I pulled a little too high that time. He said, oh, you did. Yo, I can tell. I pulled his hand off to the side.
He yanked his hand right off to the side and the guy's screaming.
I did what my father was afraid he was going to do to me.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
So I said, we can try it again. And he said, all right, one more time.
I give that guy a lot of credit because I would have said, no way. We're going to urgent care. See ya.
Corey, if you're listening, you're the man. You're a champ.
My hat's off to you, Corey.
Yeah. So I said, we'll try it again. And I said, I'm not going to pull any tricks this time. I'm really going to go on go, not two. Okay. One, two, three, boop. And it came out like nothing. And he was dumbfounded. He said, that's it. That was nothing.
That was nothing like the first time.
When you do it right, it's really not that bad. But
yeah,
we got to fishing. 20 minutes later, I hear a shout on the other side of the bay, and he calls me, bro, I got a hook in my other hand. I can't believe this. And I thought, I can. you're racking them up today. I said, I'm on a good spot. You can motor over to me, and we'll take care of it. And it was through the tip of his finger, right in front of the fingernail, I think, of his middle finger.
Jeez.
And that was a Ned rig. So there's a little weight on that, and luckily, I still had that section of 20-pound braid. I said, well, I still got this handy. And he had a partner with him. I said, hold the boats as steady as possible and held the boats together. One, two, three, pop. I'm like, all right, stop grabbing my spot and please don't do this again.
Right.
So I cleaned out two that day. And then, geez, a month and a half later, I got a hook in my finger.
Yes, he did.
Fishing the Salmon River in Pulaski, New York with some friends. We got to a spot early and we had some time to rig up. And as I was tightening my leader on a little Berkeley octopus hook, and I'll give credit to Berkeley, they make some really sharp hooks.
Yes, they do.
When that one went in, it didn't really hurt. I just thought, oh man, now I've got a hook in the tip of my finger. And some friends of mine said, you might want to have a couple drinks before you try to pull that out. And I said, no, I think I got it. And before I got my nerves up, I just, I was already tying a leader. So I had some 20-pound fluoro and I just popped it out. And they're like, oh, yeah, man, that's tough. You're going to have to figure out what to do with that. And I said, it's already out.
And
just like that.
I knew he was going to be on the Salmon River at that time. And he sends me a picture that morning early. And I'm like, oh, man, they got into him quick. And I open it up and it's a hook right in the tip of his finger. And I mean, buried up to the bend. And then a second picture was his finger with just a little red speck on the tip. Clean as a whistle.
And a hook next to it.
Yeah. I'm like, you're getting pretty good at this, but you're practicing it way too frequently.
Yeah. You're expecting a picture of another 20-pound king salmon. Instead, it was me that got hooked that day.
Yeah, but those Berkeley hooks, they catch them.
They do.
And I have done the line trick on people since then. And interestingly enough, when we were having Christmas dinner, he asked me, he said, so how many times have you gotten a hook stuck in your hand or finger all over the years? You know, because I was fishing when I was 2 years old. I've been fishing over 63 years. And fact of the matter is, I've only ever had a hook in myself once. And that was when I was 19 years old. We were fishing the West Branch of the Delaware. I was trout fishing, JD. We were on the West Branch of the Delaware up in Delhi for the trout opener on April 1st, me and two other guys. Man, there's another story here. I put a hook in somebody else. Well, in his hood. But I tell that story, people aren't going to want to fish with me. You know where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
But I was changing hooks out, and the guy who, three of us went, this one guy was much older than us, and he wanted to show us this spot on the West Branch. So it was his vehicle. He was wearing hip waders, and I'm changing hooks out, and he's tromping along to go try another stretch of the river, and he gets tangled in my line and trips, and that hook just shoots through my finger and gets buried right up to the knuckle. I'm running behind him, grabbing the line, yelling, "Stop!" Because he's still tripping and trying to catch himself, and the hook's buried in my finger. So the third guy who was on the trip, a couple years younger than me, my best friend at the time, he saw what was going on. He said, "I can get that hook out." And I said, "I don't," bonehead, I haven't changed. "I don't want to go to the hospital. I don't want to leave because we're here to fish. If you can get it out, go for it." This guy pulls out his pocket knife and a random rock from the stream and using it like a whetstone. Mind you, a random rock. All he's doing is making that blade dull. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's swiping it back and forth. And I was dumb enough to let him try it because I wanted to keep fishing. So it's in my index finger. I'm taking my left hand, my thumb, and my index finger, and I'm spreading the face of my right index finger as hard as I can. And he makes a slice right through that hook with the blade, that dull blade, and my finger opens up, and I felt it bad. He's like, "You okay?" I'm like, "Yep," gritting my teeth. I pressed both sides to spread it, and he made a second swipe, even deeper, but not deep enough yet. And it's about all I could take. He's like, I think I can get it with one more pass." I'm like, "Okay." So took a deep breath, spread my finger as hard as I could. He made a third pass, and I was seeing stars. I went, "Can't do it. Can't do it." He's like, "I'm almost there." I'm like, "I don't care. This is, you want me to do that to you? That thinking hurts." So off to the hospital we went, up in Delhi, New York. And we get there. It's a very small hospital.
O'Connor.
This is good grief. I was 19. So this is back in 1978. And we go in there, very small hospital. We go into the ER. There's one nurse there. She takes it, goes to clean it. She's the emergency room doctor was not there. He was on call because they're just not that busy.
It's Delhi. There's not a whole lot going on there.
He lived farther away from the hospital than I did. He lived an hour and a half away. An hour and a half. I sat there waiting. Meanwhile, she's taking gauze and trying to clean it up, and it got caught on the treble hook. And she just swung to walk away, and it ripped. Oh, man. I grabbed her wrist and squeezed it, and she shot me a look. I said, "It's caught on the hook." Oh, man, did that hurt. This finally... The ER doctor shows up hour and a half later, walks in, takes one look at my finger and goes, "Who's the surgeon?" I said, "He's sitting out in your waiting room." He said, "What did he use?" I said, "A very dull pocket knife." He said, "Well, I'll see if I can fix that." But he said, you're going to need more stitches than if I did it myself. And they got it all stitched up, and it was a mess. But here's the other half of that story. And
there's another half to it.
I got even with the guy who cut my finger in half unintentionally. All right. The following year, we're on the same spot. It's just me and this guy, the guy who was my self-appointed surgeon.
So West Branch, you're back on the West Branch again in Delhi.
Yep.
That's the East Branch, I believe. That's East Branch.
Is it the East Branch?
Yeah.
All right.
I grew up there.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah,
I have fished both the East Branch and the West Branch, but I got them confused.
It's okay. So, I just happen to be from Delhi. It's okay.
Oh, no kidding.
That's my hometown. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
The following year, opening it because we liked the spot. And so we went there by ourselves, and it was a lot of snow, melt, and runoff, a lot of rain. It was very muddy, and that water was, good grief, it was chocolate milk and just raging. And we're, with all apologies, JD, we're soaking, and again, I was 20 by this time, we're soaking night crawlers with split shot. Gross. That's what we're doing.
Disgusting.
Yeah, I know.
I can't stand that. I nothing makes me more mad than drowning worms and catching 25-inch brown trout. I just want
to. Catch 25 brown trout, but I'll tell you what I did catch. I caught my buddy right in the back of the head and knocked him unconscious. And it wasn't intentional. It wasn't on purpose.
The split shot knocked him out?
I did get even for him slicing my finger in half. What happened was I wasn't getting down enough. you'd make a casting and you'd see your worm right on the surface. I'm like, good grief, we need a ridiculous amount of weight to get this down where the fish are going to see it. And my tackle box and that stuff was back. Yeah, yes, I carried a metal green Old Pal tackle box trout fishing because I didn't know any different back then. And I went and I got three of the biggest split shot I had, and I pinched them on that line. And I said, well, this ought to do it. And being 20 and full of piss and vinegar, I said, all right, I bet I can reach the river from here, 40 feet away. So I wound up and I fired a cast. Now, meanwhile, my buddy, he's wearing one of those old parkas that were popular in the late 70s that had the fur around the collar.
Mm-hmm.
What were they called? Snorkel jackets, I think they were called.
I don't know.
And he's standing on the bank fishing with his back to me. I'm 40 feet away. I strong arm a cast. All of a sudden, his arm shoots straight out to the side, like in the shape of a cross, and he falls backwards on his heels, stiff as a board. Bam, right flat on his back on the ground. I go running up there, and there's my hook in the hood of his jacket. I bopped him right square in the back of the head with those three split shot and knocked him out. I very quickly snapped the hook out of that hood and chucked it. Meanwhile, he starts blinking and goes, oh, what happened? I said, I don't know, man. You just fell over backwards. Are you all right? He goes, man, my head hurts. I said, oh, you probably hit it when you fell. You know, I was afraid to tell him what happened. And now this was, I haven't seen the guy in years, but we still hung out a lot in those days. And to this day, I have never told him what really happened. He probably doesn't even remember getting knocked out. But
yeah,
so now nobody will probably fish with me. I'll fish with you, but you're in front of me, okay, Roy? You know, I'm not turning my back to you.
All right, so Ryan, what else you got? You got one more?
I got one more.
All right.
And this one we'll call best day ever, because although we've had, an innumerable number of great days in the water, this was probably one of the best days of field ever with my father. And it was the day that I got my first deer. And this was the third season that I'd hunted deer. The first two with not great success. I hit a deer that we tracked for most of the day.
Good until grief, almost 3 miles.
Until the blood stopped, because I had grazed it, and we tracked the deer until there was no blood trail. And
it was a very, very minimal blood trail. It was a long shot downhill out of a 2-man tree stand, and the deer did a high kick, like a mule kick, when he shot, which is indicative of hitting them in the heart.
Right.
So that's what we thought happened. He said, this deer isn't going far. And we tracked it 3 miles, and it was just a very minimal blood trail. And eventually it was just in the one track of the left hind leg. What we deduced eventually was he had broke the skin on that rear left hind leg, and the blood, that's why it did that high kick. It stung him right in the leg, you know, the back of the leg. And what minimal blood did come down, there was splatter at first because it was a fresh wound. But as the wound closed, it was just residual blood running down the leg, and it was just in that left rear footprint. Eventually, it just closed up completely, and you couldn't tell one track from another. And it wasn't a lethal hit. It was a wound that closed up, and the deer was eventually none the worse for wear. But we were so excited because it was the first deer he'd got a hit on, and we thought, you're going to get your first deer.
Yeah, we ended up in a different town when we
said, we gave up
when there was no more blood and we had to get a ride back to the truck. But so I'd gone a season not getting a shot, and then there was that, which really put in my head that, man, I might not be very good at this. But the following year was when I was old enough to hunt on my own. I was 16. I sat my father's old stand and you had a different setup.
Yep.
And at the time I was working nights at a local restaurant, washing dishes as a 16-year-old does. And this is when opening day of deer season was on Monday mornings, not the weekends like it is now. So I worked Sunday night and probably got home and got to bed by midnight, real late, because all the guys from Long Island that would come and hunt the state land and ruin it for all the locals would stay up late drinking at the local bars that I happened to be washing dishes at. So that's why I got to bed late. It didn't really ruin my morning, but I found it very, very difficult to stay awake. I would sit on my stool first hour of the day, first 2 hours of the day, some of the best deer movement, and it's gun season, so the deer really not that bothered. And I kept waking up and picking my head up thinking, oh man, you got to stay awake. This is not the time of the day to be doing this. And after two or three times of picking my head up thinking, oh, I got to stay awake. One time I picked my head up and 27 yards away from me were two does that looked at me. And they were very shocked, and so was I. And there I was.
Because they caught movement.
And there I was with a Remington 870 across my lap.
Across his lap.
And two deer 27 yards away looking right at me. And just as slow and as fast as I could pick that shotgun up off my lap and mount it to my shoulder. And I don't know how long that took. Mind you, I was kind of groggy.
Super slow motion.
But before they bolted, I mounted that shotgun and took aim on the shoulder of the closer one, which was bigger. And I touched a shot off and they both ran away. And we had little two-way radios at the time. And you heard the shot. And
before cell phones.
And I got on it and I just saw that doe. And then I thought it was really big. And I thought I hit it pretty. And you said, okay,
calm down.
I'll be right over. And I was coming out of my skin. I was so excited. I thought that deer was dead to rights, but at the same time it ran away like it was scared. It didn't look like it was hit, but I was also really early on in my hunting in general. I didn't have the experience that I do now, but you came over and you said, sit in your stand and I'll walk around and you place me where that deer was when you shot and we'll look for blood and hair.
Right. And to explain that, when I got up to where he was looking for hair, blood, any kind of sign. He was like, they were right here. There was two of them. They were right here, but there's no blood or hair or anything. And I said, well, look, here's what I've learned over the years is where once you walk in to where the deer was or where you think it was, when you stand up and you start walking in, the topography changes a little bit. This may not be the exact spot. He's like, no, they were standing right here. I'm like, yeah, I know it seems that way, but if you're sure you couldn't have missed and there's no hair or blood here, we need to confirm this is where they were. Take your radio, go right back to where you sat, and then look at me and tell me if I'm in the right spot or not.
And I put you in that spot and you said, yep, right here. There was blood, there was hair.
Yeah, well, when he got back to his stool, he said, oh yeah, no, you need to go forward a little bit. All right. Now turn left, back up a little bit more, right? More to the left. Okay, go forward, right there. And I looked down at my feet and it was blood and hair everywhere. I said, come here. And he walked. I said, you got a good hit. You know, it's all brown hair, no white hair. You probably hit it right where you aimed. But the bad news was the tracks led uphill. And if deer hit hard, they'll run downhill. 9 times out of 10, this deer went right up a steep bank. So we followed and we got up there on top of that bank and it headed out across the ridge line. We started doing that and we got to a spot where it had bedded down all kinds of blood. So I said, well, this is good. This, we kicked it up when we came up the bank, but you got a lot of blood here. I don't think it's going to go a lot farther. So we're tracking again. And now the blood trail is getting a little sparse and we hit the last piece, you know, last little bit of blood and nothing for about 10, 15, maybe 20 feet. So I said, all right, you need to go back to where we had that last little bit of blood and stand there and then I'll retrack. So he stood by the last little bit of blood. I went ahead that other 15 or 20 feet. It wasn't far and I'm looking. And I find a little tiny bit of blood And I turned around to tell him, I've got blood here. And what do I see laying right behind him that we walked right past? It must have stopped and backtracked. I see a dead deer laying there. I said, Ryan, turn around and look down. And fist comes up in the air. Yeah. Best day ever.
Best day ever. Yeah.
You better believe it. It was my first deer.
It was my first deer.
Right on.
There's no feeling like it. There's right. absolutely no feeling like it. Cause up to that point, I'd only shot rabbits, squirrels, partridge. And now an animal as big as me,
yeah,
a big game animal. And believe me, for many seasons before that, before I could hunt, I would sit in the stand with my father while he was deer hunting. And I got to experience full days in a deer stand, not just full days in a boat, sun up till sundown, and any pursuit that we can
share together,
That's what we were doing. But finally, it was a day that I was successful. So we field dress it and we drag it down to the truck. And mind you, where we parked the truck was up in the woods a ways as well. And we got really close to the truck and he said, stop, don't move. I see a deer. It's a buck. Don't move. And I didn't see it. And he walked out a few yards ahead.
I walked to where I had a tree that I could use for a rest.
Yeah, and you rested that Remington 1100 that you took so many deer with and got a bead on it and shot. And I didn't see a deer run. It was very, very dense timber up there.
85 yards through one gap between two trees. I had a shot right behind the front right shoulder of this deer and I took it. But that 1100 shot like a rifle.
Yeah, that was in shotgun only country back then. So yeah. I was using a Remington 870 pump and 20 gauge and you had an 1112. So it was all slug guns to kind of date ourselves. We've been hunting deer since before rifle hunting was popular in our zone of upstate New York.
Before it was legal where we are because of the population density.
So we loaded my deer and said, all right, let's throw this in the back of the truck. And then we got to follow up on this. And that ended up being that six that you
nice,
got.
Nice six pointer.
Yep. Up until that point, that was your biggest deer ever.
Yeah.
So we thought, this is great. We both still had a tag in our pocket, but instead of hunting the rest of the day, instead of dropping off that deer at the butcher and carrying on like we normally would, we loaded those deer up in the back of the truck and we drove around all over town visiting friends and family, showing off the deer that we both got that day. Best opening day. Honestly, one of the best days of my life. Yeah. Seriously, up there with getting married and just a couple other things. That was, I'll never have a feeling like that ever again. That was the best day ever.
It was. It was a great
wasn't
day.
In a boat, but man.
It was outdoors.
It was spending time with my father. And I'll say, of all the things we ever did growing up, there's never one time or any one pursuit that I wasn't included in. It could have been anything. There's never, okay, it's this season. This is what I do on my own. That my father never said that. It was always, this is when we're getting up and this is what we're doing.
Yeah, bring your jacket.
Don't forget your jacket. And it took me until my early teens to learn that lesson the hard way, but make no mistake, learning how to hunt and fish with Roy Bilby as my father was learning how to hunt and fish with cheat codes. There's no two ways about it. Having a father that included me with everything and always had the correct gear for me, a lot of it was hand-me-downs, which is fine. It's a great way to learn. I didn't have the warmest base layers or the heaviest jackets, but it made me hard and it got me acclimated to the harsh conditions that we hunt in. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not in Alberta, Canada, but we're not in Tennessee either.
That's right.
It gets cold here. And it taught me that long days in the field really pay off. Like that one year I shot that doe at the last day in the last 5 minutes of muzzleloader season on my walk out. I thought
on a walk out,
I hunted almost a week straight, sun up till sundown. There's some days I skipped that I felt really guilty. Cause you said, why are you playing video games if it's deer season and you've got tags?
Yeah.
What are you wasting your time doing this? And I'm whatever.
What were you playing?
Grand Theft Auto.
Nice.
Vice City, I think, to date myself. No, it was Grand Theft Auto San Andreas because it took me like a month to finish that game. But for like the last, I think, 4 or 5 days of the muzzleloader season, I was on break from college. So I had nothing but time. I didn't have a job or anything. So I spent that last end of the season going out every single day and I saw a deer almost every day, but I was too much of a hot rod in the woods. I wouldn't sit long enough. I would get up and move around. I was too impatient. And then the last day I gave a good 4 hour sit and I thought, you know what? I've learned a lot of lessons. I've learned what not to do, but I can hang my hat knowing that I got my head right and I hunted hard the very last of the season. So by the time I get to my car and start it up, I know that it's all behind me and I did what I could. And I just decided to take a wide loop through an apple orchard on the way out. And there was a lone big doe standing out in the open. She made a mistake because I took a kneeling position and put one right in the lungs. And it was legal shooting light, but it was so dark by then and it was snowing. There's a lot of cloud cover. That big cloud of smoke on that really cold day from my inline muzzleloader obscured everything I could see. So I shot big cloud of smoke, and when it drifted off, there wasn't anything. And it was deep snow. It was knee deep snow. It was very, very late in the season. And when I walked over, there's this big dead doe and
dropped in her tracks.
I know you were fishing.
I was ice fishing that day because I was tagged out.
You were done.
And he called me, and given the time of day, I said, "Tell me what I've been waiting to hear." He said, "I got one." I said, I yelled and it echoed across the woods. I said, "I am on my way." I was so excited to get out of there. I got my truck stuck in the snow, a four-wheel drive. I had to flag down another guy going by on the highway, had a Ford pickup four-wheel drive. I had a tow strap and he yanked me out. I said, "You got to get me out of here. My son's got a deer. I got to go pick it up for him."
You still made it there in record time. I wasn't even out of the woods by the time you met up with me.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a long drag, though. That was pretty far back on that property.
From way back in the what they called the nowhere,
what
aptly named.
That was a big lesson as well. So that was, we'll call that better late than never. But that's another tale of just teaching me.
Never give up.
Sun up to sundown is the best way to do it. And I was going to say for better or for worse. It's not like that. It's definitely for the better. Taking your kids hunting and fishing, making them uncomfortable, and pushing their limits is the best way to teach them. It taught me, it really did. And I value and appreciate you putting me to the test at a young age. And I'll say it was never in an abusive way, but it's probably more in line with how kids should be raised nowadays. You should test them. You should push their limits because it will really teach them what their potential is and what they're capable of, which to me was way more than I would have thought having not experienced those things growing up. Because I was never in danger. I was never not safe. But I definitely would have rather played video games if given the option back then. And I'm glad I didn't.
Well, it was awesome having you on today. We have the duo, Ryan and Roy Bilby, giving us some stories of what it was like, Ryan's
giving
childhood.
Giving up some dirt.
Giving some,
not too much.
Dishing some dirt up on Roy. And,
yeah.
You know, it sounds like you're a lucky guy.
Absolutely. I love my father. He's the best. And I'm truly blessed to be here. And hey, we need to get you out on the ice, the three of us together, and maybe you can learn a thing or two. How's that?
Yes,
we got to get you on the ice.
Yeah, we need to. And we got warm weather coming up, too.
It's going to it'll refreeze.
Hopefully not
it
too
will.
Warm.
No, we will get out to the place that we've discussed.
Yes,
and
the undisclosed location.
The undisclosed location. I look forward to it. Awesome. Check out Roy Bilby on Instagram at all lowercase Roy Bilby.
And throw out our email address out there.
Oh,
just in case
Angler
somebody
within,
wants to email us.
Anglerwithinpodcast@gmail.com.
And always, if I had one piece of advice to give the listeners out there, always carry an extra jacket so you don't have to do laps in the parking lot when you're out there to tap into your Angler Within.